So we can, I can pretend to be Tony Parsons non-dualist and say there's no self and it's all just happening. And that's about it. They don't really get into much more than there's no self and it's just happening. That puts the bag back in your court, ball back in your court.
I'm just wondering why we're interested.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's an oldie but goodie. Yeah. Who knows, really? I mean, we don't know what death is, but we're not all that interested in finding out. But, you know, we don't know what liberation is, but we seem to be interested in finding out. It might be because there's a, there's a much stronger, let's say, lingering appreciation. Of untethered consciousness than we let on. We can do, a good deal of complaining and, go through decades of, seeker frustration and convince ourselves that we have no clue, but that might not be the case. We might have a much deeper, and more intimate appreciation of what would you call it? freedom from orientation than we let on. And so there's a, call it an organic hunger or an organic interest to be drawn more deeply into that freedom from orientation. Yeah, we might know a lot more about it than we think. In that respect, the curious pursuit of liberation is because it's already been intuited or felt deeply enough that there's a magnetic attraction toward it. Why, just because you saw a picture of Ramana Maharshi, would that be enough of a reason? I don't think so. It's really loud typing. And now you need a quieter keyboard, yeah. you know, somehow the what we call mind, or just the, you know, the restlessness of association. The restlessness of association, which is comprehension or orientation or objectivity or subjectivity, or, you know, the sense that we are independently or individualistically existent, that we find things in experience that please and displease us. And that the, you know, the loop of craving and the loop of time are afflictive. They're afflictive in that they can be felt to be interfering with our intuition of our natural, unconditioned nature. So we might think that it's necessary then to rid ourselves of something. To return to our unafflicted nature. And that might not be all that true. Without the reflex of association, which is time and self and space and story and implication and causality, all of that is arising in the instant, right, in presence, as the imagination of you know, the long story or the short story of one's so-called life or one's so-called experience. It's like we would rather delay the simplicity of realization by committing ourselves to resolving ourselves. If I commit myself to resolving myself, then I'll be in that loop for the long haul. Because that's just content, the imagination of content, hoping to, you know, ameliorate or transcend or understand or get a leg up on the imagination of content. We think that so-called happiness comes about by changing our attitude or having certain things occur that would please us or make us more secure or satisfied somehow. So that's the path to happiness, which is the anticipation and manipulation of content or circumstance. So then happiness becomes dependent on the hallucination of one's life working out to our satisfaction. So the law of attraction or the secret and stuff like that persists in the hallucination of your life and giving you the seducing you to imagine that you can attract or create or manifest the utter nonsense that you think your happiness is dependent upon. So that condemns you, with your permission, of course, to remaining in a painful codependency with circumstances and events, because those are the things that that are deterministic of your so-called happiness. Yeah, no one ever, or very few, think, well, fuck happiness, and therefore rid oneself of the tremors of time and future in terms of hoping to get what it is that you think you deserve or wish to get in order for you to be, quote, happy, all of which distracts one from the actualization or the maturing of the intuition that you don't need anything in the first place. So the path of happy will ensure that you never become happy. If one's so-called nature has no necessity, if one's nature has no necessity, is not the consequence of your being an existent intermediary, not as a body, not as a mind, not as a feeler, not as a doer, not as a deserver or a regretter. That's, you know, we could say true or abiding happy, which is the collapse of necessity. And that's already present. And you know it, because one wouldn't have an interest in, you know, such a blasphemous topic as this one, unless you already knew it. You couldn't have an interest in something you didn't already know. The interest in all of these silly terms like, you know, realization or liberation or kensho or enlightenment or fuck all bullshit, is because your instinct is already so lit up. You already know without a shadow of a doubt that you are without necessity. You know that freedom. You know the signature of it. And so it's, you know, you could say a forgivable craving that one wants to return to or immerse in or become unfettered of the shackles of self, so that your one's unafflicted nature has its, has its time at the hotel pool.
Somebody say hotel.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it's just me at the hotel pool, you know, it's kind of nice. You can get a pina colada and everything and probably, you know, some really good nachos, but it's still me at the hotel pool. You know, you really want to be nobody at all at the hotel pool.
As long as there's a room number, you can charge it to it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you need a room number. Probably 666. Charge my room.
We don't have a 666.
It's the one up in the corner that's on fire. I was listening a little bit to Ella May, you know, doing my best to try to like her.
Oh, yeah?
And I couldn't. I tried. I couldn't.
She just came across your... how'd you end up listening to her?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Something was she doing her same old kind of spiel? Kind of
yeah, thing? Yeah, yes, yes. You know, it's as if emphasizing whatever it is that she's emphasizing is okay, but emphasizing anything other than what she's emphasizing is not okay.
Yeah. Totally.
It's like a weird double standard, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, I find it kind of, well, let's just say it's a shitty staircase. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a shitty staircase. I mean, we, you know.
With her.
Well, you familiar with Toni Parsons?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, what's that message? It's not a very complicated one.
No.
You know, there's no person, there's no me, nothing happened to me, nothing can happen to you, there's nothing to do, there's nothing other than what this is, you know. All is just happening. And so that's kind of a keen approach at dismantling the spontaneous projection of the seeker trying to resolve one's, you know, unhappiness, one's insufficiency. So that's nice. Depending on how it's wielded. But if it just becomes a refutation, then it's repetitive.
It's repetitive.
It's repetitive and a little bit, you know, it's a little bit belligerent.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean the present so-called, call it conditioning or habit, that insists on space-time creature sensation, right? Unhappiness, happiness, and all the things that accompany that. I mean, those are so, you know? That quality of experiencing is so. It's present. That you could say it punctuates the, you know, the identity and lives of most so-called people. And then just to, you know, just to refute it out of hand by virtue of some kind of enlightenment experience that you've had is a shitty staircase. At least in my, you know, my reaction to it. And of course, anything that shows up, in someone's so-called experience or question or, you know, willingness and interest to know, is either said it's just happening, right? This is just happening. So for whatever shows up in reality, whether it's, meteor headed for New York, news at 11, whatever it is, you know, is referred to as it's just happening, which okay, yeah, I mean, right,
yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay, but
just kind of, what do you do with that, really?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's
it lacks a complexity and richness and
it does, yes,
beauty, really.
Yeah, in a sense, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like a, you know, I don't know, it's like a cheater's way out.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose if it like sort of really, you know, was effective or something, I mean, I don't know.
Well, it appears to be effective in terms of, you know, how many kind of Tony Parsons clones are showing up on the, you know, non-duality, I'm enlightened, hang out a shingle scene. You know, maybe that's effective. For a while there, when Ramesh Balsekar was hot, someone wrote a book about everyone that woke up, you know, by talking to Ramesh Balsekar. But most of them, you know, whether self-proclaiming or otherwise, just kind of fell off the, you know, scene. They never became, you know, published or touring circus acts of non-duality. You know, Wayne Lickerman could be, you know, well, there's Roger Castillo and then Wayne Lickerman.
I've never seen Roger talk. But.
Yeah, he's not very interesting.
No.
And then Wayne's offspring, Bala, you know, he's kind of fallen off the circuit completely. You can't, you know, maybe he doesn't speak anymore. But there was a book written about all these people that were enlightened thanks to Ramesh Balsekar. And so that's why everyone started flocking to see Ramesh Balsekar, because he was, you know, he was, what's that called? He was a converter. The same thing happened with Papaji. Everyone was claiming, you know, enviable realization experiences. And so that set forth a whole wave of, you know, enlightened offspring like Gangaji and Andrew the Narcissist Cohen.
Muji, is he a Papaji dude?
I think Muji might be a Papaji guy, yeah, if I remember, yeah. So, and Muji's playing the, you know, worship me guru scene. You know, he dresses up in orange and sits in a throne, and everyone, you know, and it's like, wait a second, that's done. We're done with that. You know, we're done with the worship me guru scene. And so maybe Tony Parsons is, you know, after the number of years he's been teaching, he's the new wave on the block that's spawning enlightenment experiences for his devotees and students. And now they're all repeating, you know, his same shtick.
Because my friend from Arizona went out to see him.
Okay. How'd that go?
Well, I think she had fun, you know.
Yeah, right. Fun is good, yeah.
But I don't know. She didn't necessarily say, like, she was radically changed or anything. But.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Well, Naho.
Naho, yeah. That's right. It's the same shtick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just happening.
It's the British wave.
Yeah, that's right. Now it's their turn. Yeah.
Well, I guess there's just always, you know.
There's always that.
There's always that, the sort of mystique du jour.
Yeah, it is. It's mystique du jour. Yeah. Yeah. What's your special? Oh, mystique du jour. Oh, yeah, I'll have an order of that. And the palm frites. Yeah. And, you know, a lemon martini.
The haricot vert and the palm frites from...
Yeah.
And the snake oil. The snake oil comes with
yes,
that.
Yes, yes, yeah. Can I have some snake oil from our bread?
Snake truffle oil.
snake truffle oil.
I heard Anthony Bourdain says he hates the truffle oil. He says it's like Astroglide. It's especially the truffle oil thing.
Really? That's it.
Kobe beef sliders and truffle oil.
Black and white milkshake. So this reflex, you know, of so-called mind to resolve the backstory of mind. That's the loop. Whatever mind is or isn't wants to resolve the backstory of mind, which turns out to be the ongoing promotion of mind. And all of that is the present flowering of orientation and association. Sensation has been felt, let's say, by the likes of you. And now all of a sudden, you know, you're existent, right? Self-existent, because sensation has been felt. If I go to whomever and start complaining about my addiction issues and my parenting issues and my issues and more issues and my issues about my issues and then issues that I have with everyone else's issues that might have issues with my issues, again, my issues, then all of that is just, you know, the presence of the so-called complaining associative mind. That points to what? I, me, my, the body. I, me, my, sensation. I, me, my, unpleasant experience. And so mind loves all of everything it has to complain about, because then we feel that we should be on a trajectory to resolve everything that I have to complain about. None of which has anything to do with, what would we say, a more refined appetite for realization. It's just mind complaining about mind.
That's how I make a living, really.
Yeah, and it's, and it's a way to make a living. That's right, amongst many, you know. Yeah.
Are we just intersecting solipsistic bubbles?
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, all made into a nice, what's that dessert with those little round, you know, chewy crystals?
Pop rocks?
Beth would know what they're called. What are those little chewy bubble crystals that you put into like a pudding kind of dessert?
Oh, like what they put in bubble tea?
Yeah, what's that called?
Those tapioca things?
Tapioca balls.
There you go. Yeah. Solipsistic bubbles. This is the whole universe is made out of tapioca balls.
Bubble tea.
It's all bubble tea. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, bubble tea, tapioca balls, solipsistic bubbles. That is, right, the presently arising pride of self. And it's the pride of self that wants to commit itself to resolving all of the content of the pride of self. There's no way out.
you're playing with, like, those soap bubbles, they're pretty fragile and they just kind of pop.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They don't have any, you know, genuine substance. In order to maintain the illusion of personal unsatisfactoriness, you have to be ongoingly consumed with tapioca bubbles. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's absurdly simple. But the the compelling nature of tapioca bubbles and the pride of self is not so easy to relinquish.
No.
Yeah, you know, one doesn't have much incentive to relinquish, or at least consider the value. consider what it might feel like were the pride of self to be, you know, effortlessly relinquished. We want, peace and happiness or enlightenment even to be a deliverable. Yeah, we want it to be a deliverable. But the cessation of necessity is not a deliverable.
The cessation of what's that?
Necessity.
The cessation of necessity is not a deliverable.
Yes.
What might it be then?
Well, that's when you get back into the easily get back into the Tony trap. You know, it's this. This whatever this is, and even, you know, it starts getting tiresome referring to shit as this, you know, fuck this. Fuck this and fuck that. What drives one's pride of self? Necessity. I need understanding. I need to be loved. I need resolution. I need security. I need revenge. I need more money. I need my boss to behave a certain way. My husband, my wife, my kids, myself. I need. And I'm absolutely dependent upon, life as a, you know, flow of circumstances and events that had better start, going my way. So maybe therapy or in recovery or the, you know, Four Noble Truths or the Four Agreements or the Five Precepts or the 12 Steps or the, you know, Eightfold Path, or whatever number you're fond of that week. Becomes the vehicle for resolution.
It's hard to say if things not going the way you want is what's causing you misery, or what is misery?
Misery is necessity.
It's necessity, yeah.
Yeah, because necessity is the pride of self in time as a body. That's misery. Or let's just say it's the canvas for all misery to be painted upon. The pride of self is the canvas, and everything that happens and doesn't happen according to your desire is the paint. And you're beginning to look like a Pollock.
Like pushing those tobacco buds in there.
Yeah, really. You're just a burning
it in there.
Yeah, that's right. My life is really a splatter pattern of absolute misery.
Mine, it's just a smock, man.
It's just a smock. Yeah, for in your case, it's simpler. It's just a smock. That's right. And oddly enough, one already has a rather mature, if not sophisticated, appreciation for the end of necessity. This is the end of necessity. It has always been. The collapse of pride is exactly this. But guess what? This is also the genesis of pride.
It is?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not like you or I or anyone else could be accused of being responsible for pride of self. Pride of self comes with. Pride of self occurs. The association occurs out of thin air.
The end and the genesis.
Yeah, both. Yeah, it's both the genesis and the cessation. That's why, some wise person might have referred to it as emptiness and form.
I think I heard about that.
Yeah. Been floating around for a while.
Yeah. It's an old story.
Yeah, it is an old story. So there's nothing other than what we could refer to as the immaculate nature of present experience. We don't know what present experience is. We don't know what brings it about. We don't know where it will end up, whether colonizing other planets or, snuffed out, or maybe both. But the primary miracle is present experience. But not necessarily present experience according to what I think it is or insist that it is. Yeah, it's not my interpretation or projection or presumption about present experience according to science and spirituality and religion and non-dualism and Dzogchen, Kashmiri Shaivism and shamanism and whatever. It's none of those things. And yet all of those things appear as the tapioca bubbles that are, you could say, symptoms of pride of self. As you can see, the pride of self arises presently. That could be really helpful. Instead of thinking that, no, I was born and around 18 months of age, the banality of separation occurred. And then at 2, I started learning how to say no. So I've been suffering from pride of self now for quite a long time. No, you haven't. Pride of self arises presently out of thin air. And to begin to get a glimpse of it, it's like, wow, well, if pride of self is arising so-called at present, then I don't really have anything to resolve from 40, 30, 50, 60 or more years of, you know, of disgruntlement, of regret. I don't. You really don't.
I mean, even if you trace it, like, it's like, oh, you know, I was two, and then, like, somebody asked me, do you want to be a miserable self the rest of your life? And I was like, yeah, sign me up. Let's fucking do this.
Yeah, let's fucking do this. That's right. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's right. First in line. Yeah. I mean, the burden that we can feel, the overwhelm, you know, and the paralysis that's easy to feel on this fucking planet, you know, can make it appear as if you have, you know, decades of unpleasant material that to wade through or that have fashioned your, you know, your mind or your identity. You don't. Pride of self is arising simply at present. That's good news. Because liberation from the imagination of pride of self is also absolutely at present. Pride of self is the consequence of necessity. Necessity being the fermentation and fomentation of experiencing. And the end of necessity, the cessation of necessity, is as miraculously present as the pride of self is. If what we call mind is attempting to justify, explain, resolve, improve, remember, cultivate, then it remains under the influence of pride of self. The end of necessity doesn't have an intermediary. The end of necessity can't involve time or healing or resolution. And we already know full well what the end of necessity feels like in order to be having a conversation like this. You have to already have a strong intuition of the gift of freedom. You know, if a certain kind of anticipation arises in the system, whether in the biology or the thought or the emotion, and of course those are all the same, you know, it's the system, it's the field. If the slightest hint of anticipation arises in the system, then you kind of instantly get sucked back into pride of self as the body. So it's easy from there to, you know, what's going to happen to me? What'll happen if this happens? What'll happen if that doesn't happen? What'll I do about this? Won't I do about that? You know, how bad is my backlog of you know, to do's or amends.
How bad is my back?
How bad is my back? Yeah. There, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So necessity, which is the movement of content and association as a self, pride of self, occurs presently. It's made out of, you know, so-called present interpretations, though they may be conditioned by so-called prior experience. All the weight of unsatisfactoriness is present. It can't actually reach back. Memory makes it appear as if you can do a reach back, but you can't actually do a reach back because memory is hallucinatory. So in that regard, you could say, let's just call it a significant milestone in the process of, being constructively dumbfounded is you start to, decouple from the, loyalty of your past. You see that memory can do a look back, but that look back is etheric, that you're only capable of acknowledging experience in the present as presence. Now I have much less to resolve. I don't have decades of decay to resolve. I simply have the artfulness of discovering what this might be at present, not anything prior to now. And that's a big, that's a really big shift because most of us are dependent upon the pride of self as being a long running off-Broadway performance. Or as we said earlier, off Broadway, way off Broadway.
But what do they say? If you can remember the 60s, you probably didn't live through it or something.
Yeah, like right. Yeah. Right. Hmm. So our habit then is to associate with memory, ideation, justification, event, circumstance, consequence, implication, as being, you know, the fibers, the Lego set that created pride of self. So I have a lot to complain about. I have a lot to resolve. I'm going to be seeing my therapist for as long as I live, or she does. And if she dies, I'll go find another one. It does happen. Yeah. Because, I mean, look, each day that I fail to resolve everything that happened prior to this day, well, it's additive. So now as I live, the longer I live, the more I have to resolve. It keeps getting worse rather than better. And that's maybe funny, but it's kind of true. You know, the sense of psychological paralysis or emotional paralysis feels that way. It can feel that way. that instead of traveling lighter, my suitcase is getting heavier and heavier and heavier.
Keep racking up bad karma.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just a bad karma machine.
Like Velcro for bad karma.
I'm Velcro for bad karma, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The end of necessity, the cessation of necessity, is exactly so-called present experience. But, you know, consciousness is no fool. The capacity to feel what there is to feel and be released from association and capture is, well, it's kind of remarkable. I mean, it's truly transhuman. So that discovery, you know, that discovery is worth one's attention. It just is. It's worthwhile discovering how subtle, how completely irrational one's capacity for sensitivity and availability is. That's what makes the yoga worthwhile. Right? Life, if there's life, is a flow of engagement. And if I continue to punctuate this flow of engagement through the pride of self, well, that becomes, somewhat repetitive and malnourishing. But what if this miraculous flow of engagement were an ongoing opportunity and instruction, body of instruction, if you will, to learn how to refine the capacity of my, call it perceptive, abilities. Then it could become, you know, kind of thrilling. Always, always interesting and always novel, because I realize that I have the capacity to engage with this flow of experiencing in unendingly, ongoingly, a refined nature. And that's a different kind of perspective, I would think, than, you know, waiting around for an enlightenment event. Or, being kind of diplomatically belligerent in a Tony Parsons kind of way. Yeah. We want to replace the habit of complaint. With those great recruiting ads for the military, like, you know, be all that you can be. You don't want to necessarily be deployed to foreign countries to kill innocent people whom you've never met and with whom you have no quarrel. That would be kind of a tragedy. But you want to be all that you can be. Because this is a miracle. And that's maybe more of a fun way of engaging with, you know, the curious, tumbling, bumbling nature of life. The cessation of necessity it does not have to be an event. It's not event driven. And the emphasis that Tony Parsons and his minions, and not just them, but everyone, places on, you know, the so-called enlightenment experience is, I think, misleading. Because then we poor sufferers, then, you know, insist on some kind of enlightenment event to occur to us. So it's
think they do too? That the Tony Parsons people think? You think? Rely on an event?
Well, they, not just them, but, you know, the emphasis is placed on the so-called event of enlightenment, it's not constructive.
Yeah, enlightenment events aren't even that great. Like, I've had drug experiences better than that shit.
Yeah, see, a good drug experience is better than your average enlightenment event. Yeah. Here's this. Okay. And if one feels or one relates to the presently demonstrative miracle through the lens of the pride of self, then, you know, the story of self comes rushing in. The burden and the weight of self comes rushing in, and it becomes easily and quickly overwhelming. And so looking to an enlightenment event becomes like your best out. But what if this were also presenting as the fulfillment of the cessation of necessity, and that you were capable of an unending array of subtlety and feeling tone? none of which had any implication. It's almost like we'd rather have an enlightenment event, which is a kind of a static idea. Like having an enlightenment event is actually safer for us, for the pride of self, than simply tumbling through a never-ending array of incomprehensible subtlety. That's a little more unnerving. This whole emphasis on a certain event occurred, which relieved me of, you know, thinking that there was a separate person. Now I can just become, you know, kind of a belligerent talking head. It's like, what's the point of that? Really? Because there was no event. There's not even an event now. Coming up with, you know, a rancid conclusions is not that helpful for someone that might have a sincere interest in discovering what this might be or what it feels like, because then they become event driven and the vocabulary of self is, you don't have a chance to see through the vocabulary of self. And even saying stupid shit like there's no separation is already too much separation. The mind will objectify anything that's placed before it, and fast. So anything that's said by, you know, some kind of pundit of non-duality or whatever is going to be objectified. And then set up as something that has yet to occur to me. And that's not what this is. That's not the texture of present experiencing. It's not about an event. It's not about duality becoming non-duality. It's not about the presence or absence of me. It's not about any of that. You know, you could argue that it's just as much true to say that it's not happening as it's just happening. Well, what the fuck does happening mean? The end of necessity, the cessation of necessity, which is the cessation of the pride of self, I'm not sure where all the background noise is coming from. Must have been Suzanne. What?
You muted me.
I was just trying to figure out where all the background noise was coming from.
I chewed some ice. Maybe it was that.
You were chewing ice? Yeah. I don't think so.
No?
No. That's all right.
Sounds like someone's trying to break in.
Yeah, it does sound like someone's trying to break in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's just us, though.
I'm trying to break out.
Yeah. We're waiting for the sound of smashed glass.
The snow globe.
It's the snow globe thing. Yeah. Well, breaking out's great. I mean, that's a great metaphor for consciousness has found something, feels it as objectionable, associates with it as self, and then wants to break out. Which makes perfect sense. So that can encourage or elicit a shift in attention or a shift in sensitivity to see whether you have actually found something or not. The cessation of necessity is the relaxation of having found anything. And with it, then the impulse, a wise impulse, to want to break out is resolved or ameliorated. Because it's not possible to find anything. If you find anything at all, that is the objectification of the miracle of present experience, which freezes present experience as being time-bound according to your so-called sensation and the story that you're telling about that sensation. And the story told about sensation creates pride of self, which if you have any sense, you want to break out of. Although most human beings don't really want to break out of the pride of self. They just want, they want to be, quote, happier. You know, at least that's what the Dalai Lama tells us. But happy is bullshit. Happy comes and goes with the, you know, the ebb and flow of circumstances that you have no control over. Why place your bets on happiness? That's kind of silly. Besides, most people are kind of objectionable when they're happy.
Mm.
They're not fun to be around.
No.
I'm gonna stop being happy then.
Yeah, no, don't be happy. Or if you must be happy, well, be happy at home, but don't bring it out in public.
Damn those Buddhists.
Damn those Buddhists.
Damn Bobby McFerrin.
Totally damn Bobby McFerrin. Fucking poser.
He goes to Omega.
You know, he got that from Meher Baba.
Did he?
Yeah. Oh, right. Don't worry, be happy was Meher Baba's thing, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. You see, this is about a refinement in consciousness, meaning a refinement in the infinite subtlety of how present experience is felt. That's liberation. Liberation is you are released from the presumptions that you have about experience and yourself. You're no longer a victim of or relying upon the pride of self to be the determining voice. And you're released to feel present experience across an absolutely irrational and unspeakable array of subtlety. And you don't have to come to the conclusion that it's just happening. Because nothing's happening. I mean, this is, I don't know, maybe this is a kind of a blasphemy, or maybe it's the, you know, a curious observation of things. It's kind of up to you, because you don't want to say what's true or not true, because then it becomes, again, you know, instantly objectified, and then envy or rejection can occur. So yeah, who knows what's true? You don't want to say what's true or what's not true, because you don't want to trigger envy or rejection. Because envy and rejection, or rejection, are just, you know, the pride of self. Waiting around for an enlightenment event is just the pride of self. It's just a symptom of clinging. A symptom of grasping and a symptom of clinging. And there's, you know, there's nothing right or wrong with it. It's just how it rolls.
Tell that to the thousands or so people sitting in front of their guru.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't want to do that. You'll get a stampede. Well, you know, I mean, I haven't really spent much time listening to Muji, but because I don't think I could handle it. But you see, anything that becomes, you know, celebrity worship, guru worship, worship of truth, all of that becomes fetishized and objectified instantaneously. Humans are dangerous. They're crazy, prideful, fucked up, violent. They're just out of their fucking minds. And, you know, you don't want to mess with them. Whether as a guru or whatever. You know, we're dangerous animals. And there's way too many of us. I mean, nobody on this call. Everyone else there's way too many of. Everyone in this room is cool. You know, it's people in Alabama. There's too many Alabamans.
You know, I felt in the amount of time that I spent with Andrew Cohen, as pride of self is always so obvious to me. Seeing that in him, and it was just my curiosity that drove me to stay there a while and say, sure. What is the attraction here?
Yeah, right.
That was the, like, son of God, mother of God dude, right? Andrew Cohen?
Yes. Yeah. It's like emphasizing not self or the end of self is like, so what? I mean, that's not even a big deal. I had an enlightenment event and then, you know, my sense of self, whatever. I'm like, so what are you telling people about that for? Yeah, big deal. I mean, what would you emphasize? You know? There's nothing to emphasize. Nothing happened. Nothing shifted from a moment ago till now. Nothing could. Even to claim an enlightenment experience, you know, kind of makes you an attention-seeking dumbfuck. What changed? Nothing. What was there before that's not there now? What wasn't there before that is there now? Nothing. Nothing. There couldn't be anything. See, that's, you know, the release of, you know, a consciousness that imagines that it was prior. That you were prior. That's the dilemma of, you know, so-called unenlightenment is simply the imagination that you were prior. You weren't. You were not prior to now. That's strange, but, you know, just for fun, I'd say true. You were not prior to now. You've never been. So where's the big enlightenment event? I'm telling everybody. Nothing could possibly happen to you. See, the quality of subtlety that say consciousness is capable of revering is absolutely transhuman. It's non-relational. It has nothing to do with space-time or the refutation of space-time. It has nothing to do with self or the refutation of self. It's not true to say that it's just happening. It's as much true to say that it's not. And you, I, whomever, are, let's just say, just as capable as the next person, if there were any, to go down this, you know, curious road. To go down this curious so-called, you know, mesmerization of availability without any frame of reference whatsoever. And here it is. This is the genesis of the myth of necessity, and this is also the collapse of that myth, freedom from necessity. If you imagine you were prior to now, well, you have a story to tell. But you were not prior to now. I don't care how many artifacts you can show me from your storage containers. I don't care how much stuff you got, how many trophies and scars and wounds and adorations. I don't care how many artifacts you can find. You were not prior to now. Ella May can just fuck off. Oh, hang on, Steve. You're muted. What were you saying?
I said that's not Ellie Mae Clampett.
No, she's someone you want to be with. she's got like short shorts and a pig. that's a find. Now, if she were giving enlightenment teachings, I'd be in the front row. Jethro is probably working the door. Oh, God. It's like, you know, it's not necessary to bully people by having a, you know, ready-made recipe for what this is or isn't. I mean, here's this remarkably incomprehensibly dynamic system which refreshes without delay, has no duration, can be felt and seen without any limitation whatsoever. It is absolutely transcendent of any kind of boundary field that, you know, a human might imagine. And in the midst of that wonder, I'm going to be spiritually belligerent? That's just so fucked up. It's as if the end of the road is the, you know, the revelation of not self. It means nothing. You know, because we're so preoccupied with the myth of suffering and the myth of the end of suffering, we place value on the imagination of a so-called event where someone became not self. Guess what? If I'm no longer placing all of this unnecessary, celebration or burden of the presence or absence of suffering, then who cares about that so-called enlightenment event? One has an opportunity to be, you know, nourished beyond imagination with the demonstration of present experience. As the demonstration of present experience, why place any emphasis at all on the presence or absence of self, or make a discrimination between duality and non-duality as if that means anything at all? And it doesn't. Anyway, that's my soapbox.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you. Rock and roll.
I just feel like even if you have an experience, you could still have that, like, poltergeist kind of thing happen where it's sort of like, I'm back kind of thing.
Sure.
It may not. Just because you have one doesn't mean.
Well, no experience amounts to anything. An experience that you've had prior to now, the one that you're having now, or the one that you insist or anticipate you'll be having after now. No experience means anything at all, of enlightenment or anything else for that matter. If there's a revelation, it's the revelation of this emptiness or presence. Sounds like the UFOs are coming to get us.
That's right. It's the poltergeist.
Yeah. Uh-oh, here comes an anal probe. I can feel it coming. Every time I hear that sound, it's the fucking Grays coming in through the window. Resistance is futile. No, not this time. Oh yes, this time. You see how quickly mind goes to the framing of time as if experience could possibly have been prior to now and is likely to be henceforth. See, that's the pride of self, is the extrapolation of temporality.
Is there a Sanskrit or a Pali word for, like, a combination of emptiness and presence?
Probably. I mean, they were good at this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, much better than I am. I'm a hack. Uh-oh, here they come. They're out on the lawn.
Scary.
It's either that or they've got the washing machine going.
Yeah, it could be that. Maybe they're just doing their wash, not to worry. What do they wear? Maybe they just jump in the washing machine in total. How do you bathe the gray? You throw them in the washing machine. They like tumbling around and around. They have gills so they don't drown.
Well, we'll put them on gentle cycle.
Put them on gentle cycle. Then you hang them out to dry by their ears. Then you get the anal probe. After they're all dried off.
Just as long as they use truffle oil.
That's right. As long as they use truffle oil. Then it makes the whole experience a little smoother.
Tastier.
Yeah, no wonder Anthony Bourdain can't stand the truffle oil anymore. He associates the smell of it with those anal nocturnal anal probes from the graves. It's always good to wrap up the conversation to end where you started.
That's right.
Oh, God. All right, I got to breathe. Hey, listen, thanks for everyone for having some fun, and some of you will see you on Thursday, maybe.
Thank you.
All right.
Rock and roll. Thanks a lot. You bet.